You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
But probably not. And now sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
Don't you see? It's so simple. Step one, we Google the biggest flops on Broadway. Step two, we find the crazy stories behind them. Step three, we see how they lose millions of dollars.
Millions?
Broadway isn't cheap. A lot of fancy people want to be producers. Step four, find out why the show won't go on. Step five, end this episode and head to Times Square.
Times Square? That'll never work. Only Broadway successes are in Times Square.
Oh, ye of little faith.
Old hat. I should have said that with a British accent.
Welcome.
What's up, theater geeks?
What is up? You missed me last week.
Yeah, I think the people did. There was no singing.
I know, it was so boring.
I know.
I was listening to it, editing it, and blah.
No singing at all.
Not a single tune.
I warned you all, though.
Yeah.
I was like, Pamela's not here. There's no singing. I'm sorry.
I'm back, though. I'm back, ladies and gents. It was just a weird scheduling thing, you know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Happens sometimes.
It does. And it'll probably happen more. Because it works 7 days a week. So we have a special guest.
Very excited.
A very special guest.
So this is part of our new work. Part of our new work series. So just to give a little backstory and kind of introduce our guest. Last year, January 2018, if you listened to last week's episode, you will have met Jody Beck. And she and I produced a concert called Typecast.
Starring?
Pamela! And also the actress who she just became like the first black female to be
Glinda in Wicked. Yes, yeah. Totally. Listen, I was not the star. I was being funny. I was not.
You had very star moments though, and you really did.
Greatest.
Yeah, you really did. It was excellent.
But I will say that we were the cast that you and Jody and Madeline, who is our special guest, by the way. Sorry, I just spoiled it. Spoiler. Sorry. Whatever. Sorry, not sorry. The cast that you guys put together were incredible.
We were blessed.
I was very insecure.
No.
Until the performance, and then it's like, you know, I don't know. You get the adrenaline pumping, and then everything's okay. But like leading up to that, you go to all these rehearsals, and you're in this room with incredibly talented people, and it's very humbling, which is a very good thing in this business to be humbled.
We were so blessed, and to talk about how blessed we were. Mm. One of the things that happened is like during the course of putting together our team, I said to Jody, I was like, I think I really want a girl squad. And she was like, yes, I love this. I think we should have a girl squad.
Yeah.
But then we were all like, we don't know any female music directors.
Oh, man.
So we went to the social medias and one person from Jody's gym was like, well, I know this music director named Madeline Smith. And so I went on her website and I was like, is she going to do this with us? Because we're going to talk to her, but like, would she actually do this with us? And Madeline has this huge wonderful, beautiful heart. And so yes, she absolutely did the show with us, and it was
rocked it out.
She really did. We were just like blessed beyond measure.
Yeah.
She is the youngest woman to conduct on Broadway. She did Waitress, and she's just like brilliant. And she's also like so calm and chill. So,
like, which is a very important thing to have as a musical director.
So zen. It really is. So it would just be like, we like Jody and I would be like, okay, this one thing's not quite working, or we need to figure this one thing out. And Madeline was like, okay. And she would just like sketch a little bit on the score or whatever and be like, it'll be fine. And then we were never worried because we were like, it's Madeline, it will be fine.
And it was.
It was always
fine.
It
was more
fine.
Than fine.
It was.
So welcome, Madeline Smith.
Welcome.
Thank you so much. It is so nice to be here with both of you. I could do this all day. Tell me more.
She's got the comfy chair. So.
Yeah, so in this episode, we just want to talk about, because we know that you work on a lot of new shows.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I was like, coming from a music directing perspective and working on a new show where like the scores are still being built and being reworked all the time. Mm. Can you just tell us how you first got started and got interested in music directing? If there was anything in your childhood where you have like geeky stories like Pamela and I do about loving theater.
Oh, yes. So many geeky stories. Well, I guess it started with piano lessons. Mm-hmm. I took classical piano lessons pretty intensely as a little kid through middle school. And right alongside that, my father was the music minister at our church. Mm-hmm. And I was accompanying our congregation when I was 8, which now I'm like, that's like child labor. Like, that's ridiculous. But honestly, like, I didn't have any perspective. It was like, oh, dad needs.
How big was the church?
I want to say like 150, like a
wow.
small,
okay.
like, you know, pretty medium size.
Yeah.
But honestly, a lot of what I do now, I think that I cut my teeth in that environment because it's such a collaborative, open mm-hmm. space. Like, it's the farthest from a performance atmosphere that you can get. And I think even just the skill set of like accompanying as opposed to performing, mm-hmm. that's not really from studying piano lessons, like that's from church. And I did that. I mean, I still do it. I've done it since I was 8. It's crazy.
That's awesome.
And yeah, in high school was when I was sort of bit by the bug, which I can largely attribute to Wicked. When I was much younger, my whole family loved Les Mis. Like, I knew
totally
all the words, except for the curse words, which my dad would sit and watch the 10th anniversary VHS concert with
totally
us and mute on the bad on the curse words, which is amazing for two reasons. One, because he was so, you know, conscientious, but also that he knew it
yeah.
so well. Just be like,
so funny.
Beep, beep, beep. So I guess Les Mis was my first love, but then Wicked was kind of like, mm-hmm. now it's like I had ownership over it, and
sure.
it was like my show. And so in high school, I asked to stop taking piano lessons and to take acting classes and voice lessons, which was hugely dramatic for my 13-year-old conception of like who I was. I mean, it was really quite a change. And my parents let me go for it. So
awesome.
I was in my high school musicals just at my, you know, public high school. But I think once you've felt the community feeling, it's really hard to turn back.
Completely.
And so yeah. when I started college, I didn't think I was fated to be an actress exactly, but I knew there was something that I couldn't give up in,
yeah.
in what theater was. And so I was kind of like an ex-pianist and church accompanist and loved my high school a cappella group and somehow realized that these skills amounted to music directing, which
yeah.
I don't think I really even understood that job description until college.
Yeah.
Started music directing extracurricularly in undergrad, and then I really think the first time I conducted a pit orchestra, like mm-hmm. the moment I did, something shifted, and I knew, like, I had a moment of clarity where I was like, wait, like, this is the actual best thing in the world objectively.
Oh.
So like,
oh, nice.
So
awesome.
Like, anyone who's not doing this is like not living their best life. Which I know is actually subjective, but I think honestly, from like my sophomore year in college on, I knew I was just going to move to New York with nothing and make a go of it. So I didn't do any recruiting or job interviews. I just got an apartment with all my savings and kind of went from there.
That's incredible. Yeah. Where did you grow up?
I was born in Atlanta, but by middle school had moved to Connecticut, which is where my parents still are.
Just a stone's throw from the big city.
Did you come in and see shows with them?
We did. It was a very special occasion. It was like a Christmas present sort of thing.
Oh, that's nice.
Like maybe once or twice a year. And so New York had this sort of like sheen of mystique to it that now is. Doesn't always.
Yeah.
Not a sheen.
No, we live here now.
Yeah, now we're like, oh.
I think there's this test, like, when are you a true New Yorker? Uh-huh. And everyone says, like, 10 years. You've lived here for 10 years. You're a true New Yorker. I don't think that's true. I think when it loses its sheen, you are a true New Yorker.
You belong. Yeah. Yeah. So can you tell us, like, what was the first, like, big show that you found a little bit intimidating that you did here?
Big or small, it could be.
Yeah, I mean, that you just were like, what?
You know, it's funny. It's like sometimes, like in some ways, I would never want to relive my first year in New York for the sleep deprivation and anxiety. I mean, I was just like, no, I was like crazy. But
that adjustment period is so real.
So intense.
Yeah.
But I think there was something kind of special about it in that every accomplishment was sort of my biggest accomplishment.
Yeah.
So I felt like any gig I got, it would be like, oh, my mom, like, I'm doing the thing. And so I remember feeling like I was climbing mountains all the time, even though, you know, very soon after I moved here, I was like the assistant music director for a 5-day reading. Mm-hmm. But on the first day, the MD just sent cast members in to learn music with me, and they'd all been on Broadway. I mean, I just like, I didn't understand yet how fluid the kind of strata are of the community, and how everyone knows everyone. And people who work on Broadway by day, they might be doing a tiny reading that never goes anywhere. So but I definitely had some, like, I was so intimidated by everyone that I, especially like actors who I respected, because it felt like, who am I to fix your cutoff on that note? And it really took some time to adjust to that. I think
that's so important. I mean, you talked about collaboration before. The theater is all about collaboration.
Yeah.
And I, as an actor, can't do my job without the musical director and without the stage manager and without the director. So it's all this. But you also don't have a job to do without the performers.
Absolutely.
And the stage manager doesn't know how to do the music part, but he knows how to do the staging part. So then it's like it all has to work together. It's really interesting.
Yeah, that's one of the many things that I do love about the theater is the collaborative aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a group project, but in a good way, right? Mm-hmm.
like nobody's slacking.
Right. Because everybody knows that, like, if one piece of the organism is not working well, then that could just mess up.
We will all have egg on our face, or we just won't go anywhere from this point.
Right.
There's this huge kind of pressure to succeed, but everyone feels it in the same way, and it's not like a bad pressure. It's like an exciting adrenaline induced pressure, like an instant pot. I'm just waiting. I'm waiting for my spaghetti squash to be finished in 10 minutes.
So. Trip and a half.
We're sponsored by Instant Pot.
If only.
Instant Pot.
If you're listening.
Instant Pot. We would totally talk all about you.
I love my Instant Pot.
Oh my gosh. Can you tell us how you got the job at Waitress? Like how that came about?
Definitely, yeah. Most of my favorite things in my life professionally started at the bottom of the totem pole, either as a pianist, being able to sight read well, or as someone who can transcribe sheet music and use the software that people use to make sheet music. And my job on Waitress was just keeping up with the sheet music. Sarah Bareilles, the composer, isn't from a sheet music world. It's not necessary for what she does. She has her band and does her thing. So it was to keep up with what she was doing and codify it.
Were you listening to her music and then actually writing out? Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
She's shaking her head. Yes. I have to remember that this is a podcast.
Well,
yes.
Well, I was in rehearsal. I joined the project when it was in its Broadway rehearsal process. Yeah. So a lot of it was already written when I arrived. But it was just being the scribe, like the kind of archive. And something unique about Waitress is that the band is the orchestrating team, which is, I believe, unprecedented on Broadway.
That's it. That's really cool.
And really has a lot of upsides because, you know, who knows better how to make the bass part sound good than the bassist?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so there's this sort of shared ownership and shared creativity that resembles the way an actual band would make music.
I wish I could have been in that meeting with Sarah and her band going, hey guys, I feel like I want to write a Broadway musical. And they were just all on board with it. I just love that.
It's amazing. It's a really interesting hybrid of theater people and kind of music world people.
Well, Sarah was a big theater woman.
Yeah.
Girl at the time, but woman now.
Yeah. and even more so, it's funny how these things loop around, right?
Yeah. She's been Jesus in it Christ, three superstar. Times.
She did it the right way. She succeeded, and then she's able to do any Broadway musical she wants.
Right.
Whereas the rest of us just want to be Broadway stars. But.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so keep going with the story. Yeah.
Yeah, so I was, you know, scribing not only the songs, but each instrument's part for the songs so that there was some kind of record of it. And then just started accompanying rehearsals, which again is like, it's a entry level music team position to just be able to be like, I know this music well, I can play.
Yeah.
And about 6 months after it opened, they gave me a go at conducting the show.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it's beautiful. I think that upward mobility is such a like elusive thing for a lot of aspects of our industry. And, you know, I've also been the assistant to the assistant on shows for 3 years with no payoff and like no. So I really think that for some reason it was just supposed to happen that way. Yeah. And it's become like a pretty big bullet point on the story of how this has all unfolded. So
It is interesting because a lot of times what will happen in this business is that you're so good at one thing that they don't want to make any move for you.
Right. So true.
Because, well, no, but we really need a really good sight reading accompanist. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to keep you there. Mm-hmm. And, and they never give you that kind of chance to move upwards. Yeah. That's really awesome.
It's awesome. And then you also adapted Frozen Junior?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Oh,
can you explain
fun.
That?
Isn't I didn't
that?
Know that.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting. Like, in some ways, a very parallel journey in that I got a voicemail from Bobby Lopez, who had gotten my name from someone, and he said, we need someone to start transcribing all the sheet music for Frozen, the Broadway musical. Can you start like today?
Nice.
And this was in that first year. I was so maxed out. I was like running around. And my roommate like listens to this voicemail with me and they were like, you can't. When would you even find a
but
minute?
Like,
and I
called
back and I'm like, I'm starting today. I mean, it was, so odd. So I was the transcriber assistant from before the very first reading of it all the way through its out of town tryout, so like a couple years with those people and that material, and then hit a tough crossroads right before its out of town tryout where I just, you know, scheduling problem, had to choose between continuing on in that same role with no promotion or following a totally unrelated passion project that was having its first production. And I agonized and I made pro-con charts and I, you know, was so upset. And ended up respectfully and gratefully leaving the Frozen team. Mm-hmm. And then the craziest thing, 6 months later, Disney itself called and asked if I would adapt Frozen Broadway into Frozen Junior and Frozen Kids. Which ended up being like actually very creatively stimulating and fulfilling because I knew the material and set out, and now it was like dump the puzzle out on the table. how is this possible for children to do?
That's awesome.
The music's incredibly challenging. It's you know, you have to abridge it. You have to add more characters to include more kids, and such a fun exercise. And it's finally just been released, and so schools will start doing it this year.
So much
so
fun!
Neat.
Yeah.
So
cool.
Was there a book writer that joined with you as well?
Yeah. This was so smart of them. They got the book writer who wrote the Cruise Line adaptation of Frozen.
Oh, smart.
Which is a 60-minute version of Frozen. Mm-hmm. So she was bringing in the 60-minute. And I was bringing in a knowledge of the new Broadway material. Mm-hmm. It was really match made in heaven. And because on the first day we met, we were already so deep into the details of the characters in the story.
So good.
And it was kind of frantic because we were also adapting Frozen Kids, which is 30 minutes for third to fifth grade.
Oh my goodness.
Simultaneously.
Yeah.
As Broadway was in previews, changing things.
Oh, man.
So sometimes we would set something and then find out that, like, the song was cut. And, of course, Disney can't license to schools something that doesn't end up on Broadway.
Right.
So,
yeah.
It was really a wacky few months, but we all survived, and I think all of the products turned out really great.
That's awesome.
Yeah, how many months did it take you to finish?
Oh, man. I got hired December of 2018 and went to conduct the recording session in Nashville in May. So pretty fast. I mean, and once the orchestra's recorded, it's like, can't change it now. So, it's a really cool element of what this Disney library is that they make excellent backing tracks that they send to schools, which is aligned with their mission of even schools with no money to do this, with no teacher who's ever done it, with no music director, they really try to make it possible. They send you a box with, like, here's how to block a scene.
Well,
like,
that's
really wonderful.
Yeah, and this, like, state-of-the-art Nashville recording orchestra playing the music for your kids to sing along to. I mean,
it's
really moving what their mission is.
Well, that's awesome, because that's just, like, making it accessible to everyone. Right.
Well, because they know how important the arts and music and that kind of work is to the overall picture of a child's education and a child's life and well-being.
So cool. Okay. So... moving forward, you are about to go to ART to work on a new musical. That, funny enough, I heard I think it was 3 or 4 songs from in 2016 because the gentleman who wrote it, the brothers, they were part of Lynn and Steven's writing, what do they call it? Fellowship. And so at the graduation, like, I have a friend who was directing it. So myself and one of Robbie, who, if you've listened to this podcast, you all know him. Robbie and I went to this graduation, and this was one of the two shows we loved the most. So when you said you were working on, like, the full production of it, I was so happy to hear that, like, something is happening with it.
Don't know what production
is. Right. So I'm, as I continue, so Madeline, if you can just tell us a little bit about the show, how you got involved with the show and things like that, that would be great.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really excited about this one. The show's called We Live in Cairo. It is a retelling of the events of the 2011 revolution in Egypt that in 18 days about 1 million revolutionaries stormed Tahrir Square and set up camp there, and after 18 days they successfully overthrew a 30-year president.
So cool.
Yeah, it's amazing, and it sort of flashes between that moment of so much energy and activism and then 2014 when Egypt has fallen back into a political state that some people would say is actually worse than before the revolution. And it's complicated. And it just follows 6 young people who are friends and who get involved and shows how their bonds kind of coalesce and then fall apart. And it's a really interesting moment to be talking about, like, activism and, yeah, like, what can we even do, basically. Mm-hmm. And I think what I love most about the show is it sets a bar of, like, well, sometimes you really can do something.
Yeah.
And just ask the question of, like, how on earth did this work? Mm. So I'm very excited.
The music was so beautiful.
Yeah.
It was gorgeous.
Yeah. It happened in Cairo?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. That was the kind of center of the revolution. And
I'm sorry. The title is It Happened in
sorry.
Cairo?
Oh, sorry. We Live in Cairo.
We live in Cairo. No, that's
right. Yes. and these brothers, Daniel and Patrick Lazur, young guys, Lebanese, and they've been writing it for 5 or 6 years.
It's amazing.
They've just stuck to their guns, and we have an amazing female Egyptian director on board.
So good. Yay!
And a Palestinian choreographer.
So good.
And we're just hauling up to Boston with our Arab cast to put our play.
I love it so much.
It's good.
So excited about that.
Awesome.
Is there anything else that you're working on that's coming down the pike that you're excited about?
Yeah. I'm a few readings in on a new show. It's a punk rock Revolutionary War spy musical.
Oh, wow.
And it's all female or gender nonconforming actresses who are all actor musicians.
Okay.
So it's called Agent 355, and it's exploring this question of George Washington's spy ring, which had all male members and then one female member. Mm-hmm. And to this day, we don't know the identity of that woman, but she's referred to in letters. And it's sort of like a mythical thing of, like, who is this woman, which I love because it means she was the best spy.
Yep. Right?
Nobody
knew. We know the name of every man who was in that spy ring.
But you don't know the woman. Yeah, the best spy.
So the form of the show is this, a band, like a punk rock band, and each person in the band sort of doubles as both a man who is in the spy ring and then a possibility of who this woman might have been.
That's cool.
And it's been challenging and really fun, in part because actor musician shows are just, like, a really humbling and fun challenge. And I think for a music director, I did a few of them last year, and it's really on my mind a lot. I think you can't just go in and kind of, like, do your music director magic and be super efficient and, like, polished because everyone's just coming in. You have amazing instrumentalists who aren't as great singers or vice versa, and and you're just collecting all this data about where everyone's at, and I think most importantly, just trying to make sure everyone feels really, really valuable to that ensemble. Mm-hmm. And the sense of ensemble when you're playing instruments, I think, just it dials up immediately because you're relying on each other for everything, for the tempo and your first note. I mean, it's all the group. So we've been really lucky. We're kind of assembling our core team of, I think, the performers who will do this show. But it's also been challenging because I've been written into the show.
Oh, wow.
As a character. With the thinking being, eventually this would probably be like an MD track in the show. Like, it's kind of like the conductor, but I'm playing piano and, like, I sing a song and now I have lines and it's like, how far is this going to go? But as I said, like, way back, I mean, I loved performing. I was always in choirs and things. And so it's like, it's good. It's like I'm trying to stay open to, like, don't tell yourself that you can't do it just because you're not, like, an actress.
Absolutely.
Like,
right.
There's a whole new kind of theatricality emerging right now
that
is not asking you to, like, quote,
it's much
be
more
an
ambiguous.
Actress. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, like, if these shows that have more of, like, a storyteller thing where it's just about the music and about the text, like, who knows how those departments are going to start converging.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
That's awesome. So, like, can you talk a little bit about what it's been like to be in a part of the theater that's been pretty male dominated, and how sort of being a young music director, young female music director, has kind of I mean, you're going to lead the way for so many other young people. So super excited about that. But like, just like what it's been like for you and the women who've gone before, and that if you've gotten to meet anybody that you'd looked up to.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'll start with the women who came before, because I really feel like I'm in sort of the second wave of women trying to do this. And now it's sort of like celebrated or almost trendy. Like I definitely get emails sometimes that say, like, from a man that's like, we're looking for a female music director, which like I have to admit actually is a little irritating, because it's kind of like, if you made that decision among your team, that's great. But like, couldn't you just say you want to hire a music director?
Yeah.
But seriously, like, I am benefiting from the fact that it's like in vogue to promote diversity on your creative teams. And I think in any conversation about the male dominated nature of it, I just have to like pay homage to the women who like were doing it when it was not trendy and it was not in vogue, and like,
and it could have almost been potentially dangerous.
Yes, no doubt. And I mean, the like Janine Tesoris and Mary Mitchell Campbells of the world, I mean, they were doing it, you know, Kim Grigsby. So I do feel like I have dealt with some stuff, but like I am get like reaping the benefits of their work. And I think sometimes it's hard to parse out, as you said, being like a young female, like what about my experience is which of those adjectives? Because I think there's the feeling of being looked down upon for being young, which in some cases is like a little reasonable. It's like, no, you're right. Like I don't have as many credits as someone else who you could hire. But then there's also the feeling of being because you're a woman, which is ridiculous and should never happen. So navigating that and wearing both of those labels can sometimes be a little confusing. But I think I have my friend Sammy Candle. She's a director, and she has this great rule of thumb that, or quote mantra maybe, that we share, that what you lack in experience, you can make up for in preparation. And she's sort of my hero in this aspect, because she can, she's, you know, she's quiet and sweet and kind of small, and she can run a rehearsal of 50 people, because anytime anyone has a question, she has already thought. I mean, she's so prepared. And I think you can gain the trust of your colleagues by just doing the work and just show up with the work done. So when I'm anxious about all the like dynamics and all the politics of it, sometimes I'm like, all I can do is go home and do my homework.
Yeah. Right. You can only do what you can do.
Yeah. That's right.
So in closing, do you have any, I guess, advice for young women coming up, young music directors anywhere, young people who think like this might be a path for them, who are interested in it?
Yeah. I mean, I'd say the most important thing in all arts is to just like dig into what paths might be available to you, because I looking back, I'm like, how was actress the only thing that occurred to me? Like, I had so many kind of propensities and interests, and like no one ever said, oh, you're an amazing pianist, whatever, you know.
But no, they're really, you're right, there's a lack of knowledge of the opportunities that are there for people within the industry. I mean, it wasn't until I was in my 20s that like I had a teacher that was like, you'd be a good producer, and I was like, oh, I never...
Well, what does a producer do? Don't they just put up the money? Like, of course, these questions come to your mind. Right. And until you're actually in the industry, you really don't know what all the cogs and pieces are that are running this behind the scenes.
Well, I mean, I will say he did explain what that meant. And when he said it, I was like, I should do that. But it wasn't until... until you're in a moment or in a space where people have a broader understanding of what making theater actually means and what that looks like you are very limited. I was doing the same thing, thought actor.
Right.
Like, that's what I...
Me too.
But you actually should be an actor.
That's right.
That's the difference.
Oh, man. Yeah. I think that's really it. The first step, at least, is like just notice the boxes that you're being put in.
Yeah.
And then ask questions and get out of them. And at least in the Broadway community, I mean, honestly, like in terms of leading the way, that's another source of comfort to me. Sometimes I'm like, maybe I don't deserve everything that's come to me. Maybe it is because it's trendy and because people are panicking about being all white men. And honestly, even if that's true, if it's starting to shift any kind of proportion towards women being considered for jobs, then that's enough for me. Like,
yeah.
I maybe some woman who is more competent than I am is 10 years behind me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, if I can just, you know, hack away at, like, the imbalance a little bit.
Absolutely.
And to that end, I get an email or Facebook message maybe every, like, 6 months from a girl who just, like, found me somehow in high school. And I always, you know, talk on the phone, get a coffee, try to because it's, like, the least I can do for the women who tangibly and invisibly set me up for success and what
Absolutely.
I'm doing. And so, to your point, I think a piece of advice would be, like, just go for it. I mean, if you're going to be in New York and you want to sit in a Broadway pit and see what's going on, find an email address, find someone on Facebook, and nothing to lose. And I bet you would be surprised at how many people would say it's no problem at all.
I agree with that completely.
Yeah.
That's excellent advice.
Awesome.
This was fun.
Yes.
Happy Women's History Month, you guys.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot that was, yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's our episode. Thank you so much, Madeline, for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Coming out to the Queens.
I know.
Anytime.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.